So welcome back, everyone, to the second day of the training school. We start with a session on the social life of methods, and it is my pleasure to introduce Evelyn Rupert, whom you have heard yesterday is co-director of the social life of methods team in the center in CRESC. Evelyn works on sociology of governance, governing populations, and how populations become objects of knowledge. So I think you hear lots of resonances with the work that many of you, many of us have been doing. I think one title of Evelyn's work, I picked one title which I think captures some of this interest, making populations from censuses to metrics. And that takes me to another interest that probably Evelyn will be talking more about. It is this the interest in devices, technologies, and their role in making populations and making objects of knowledge. Evelyn has also done work on transactions and transactional data. And as I understand, you have two projects you are working on at the moment, the challenge of the digital and the device, which I think is a really nice title, so you might want to tell us a bit more. I'd like to welcome you, and thanks very much for spending time with us, because you've been here from the beginning and sharing thoughts with us today. So Evelyn will be speaking for about 20 minutes, and then we'll try to have about 10, 15 minutes for a discussion, and then we can have more discussions around, during the day.
Great.
Over to you.
Thanks so much, Claudia. And I really appreciated having this opportunity, especially yesterday, to be kind of like a fly on the wall, as it were, and listening to other people in another discipline sort of struggle over some similar issues and debates. It's in some ways very refreshing, in some ways repetitive of what, you know, we struggle over, and we don't have answers either, but I have some ways of thinking about it that we're trying to develop. It's also nice to welcome IR researchers to the methods debate, which my discipline, sociology, has been going on about for a long time, and which I think, as Jeff, I think you said yesterday, there's something in the air about methods. Well, it's in the air in the social sciences more generally, too, and there is a renewed interest in methods and questions of methodology, of which our sort of center is engaging in. Some of those issues that you raised yesterday make it easy for me today, because you're clearly already well thinking about the same things that some of us are, whether it's contingency, heterogeneity, complexity, distributed agency, materialities, genealogies, that language we're all familiar with, so we don't have to, I think, rehearse all of that. So I want to sort of hone in on how we're pulling that together and trying to think about it. We call this the social life of methods, and sorry, Claudia, it's another acronym, and we call it SLOM. It sounds kind of dirty, slimy, but these long phrases are hard. So when you hear SLOM, that's what we mean. It's the social life of methods. And it is with the Center of CRESC, which, as you see here, is a joint center from the University of Manchester and the Open University. And we've been around for some 7 years now. And we're into the second year of ESRC-funded cycle. And as part of that second year, we launched this new theme, which we call an interconnecting theme. And the reason, or one of the reasons we launched it, is in the first 5+ years of our operation, we had a series of themes that different researchers from sociology, history, geography, science and technology studies, business, were working on, whether it was financialization or themes of like population, such as myself. But critics of the center, or when our center was being reviewed by the ESRC, said, what are your cross conversations? You're doing some great work, but what is it all adding up to be amongst you as different disciplines? And this is a question we generally, I think, have to grapple with when we say interdisciplinarity or multidisciplinarity or whatever. How does it all come together? And the one way we found it was coming together is that we were all studying social and cultural change, and we were all either using methods, or we were interrogating, studying, and analyzing methods out in the world that attempt to speak the language of change. And we thought this was a cross-cutting thing that we could collaborate on. And actually, without knowing it, we were involved in that kind of conversation. So we decided to put a theme, or interconnecting theme, name to it. And through this past year, started to articulate that into something more meaningful than social life of method. And that involves a collaboration, which you folks know what that's like, and it's tough. It involves about 15 core researchers and directors of CRESC, but principally myself and John Law, as you heard yesterday, and also another sociologist who used to be a director of CRESC, but that is now at York, a sociologist named Mike Savage. And the three of us have had the challenge to try to put forward at least a statement, or what we call a methods agenda, that brings all of our various interests of a lot of people together. And the key point that we have all agreed on is that methods are implicated and active in the various subjects and objects that they seek to investigate. And so we want to put those objects and subjects and those methods that are enrolled in that on the table. It's also by doing that that we can set this kind of agenda, or what I'll call a set of questions about methods and methodology. And we've started to put this together in a working paper, which I just confirmed with John we will have finished by the end of this month, and it will be on our... just wanted to make sure that we are almost there, because we've been co-writing it, and I'm doing it through a kind of messy process of tracking and commenting on a document that looks rather like a Christmas tree right now, but it's effective in the sense that I'll be talking a little later about digital traces. We have our own digital traces of our collaboration. And although I lose sight of what bits belong to whom, we kind of, you know, can see that in those traces, which is interesting. But I'm also saying that because it is a work in progress. So this is a fine opportunity for us not only to listen to you, but, you know, to put up this working paper and hopefully hear some things back. We're also differently oriented, even though I think, well, we're all in sociology departments. We have different backgrounds. John, as he said yesterday, more STS, draws on people such as Donna Haraway. I'm much more sociology and drawing classically on Foucault, and Mike is more on Bourdieu. And we kind of grapple and have tensions. And I think I can say, speaking for myself, it's full of productive tensions. But we are all in agreement of trying to intervene in what we'd call a traditional way of thinking of methods in our discipline in particular. So I'm going to emphasize what interests me about that agenda. It's a much broader one that this paper will elaborate, and I will focus, as Claudia has already suggested, on knowing and governing populations, which I'll exemplify a bit later in my brief talk here. When John presented a first version of our paper, which we actually call the Double Social Life of Methods, last year at our conference, there was a question from the floor. I'm glad it went to John, not to me. And it said, well, when you say double life, are you trying to say there's some secret life, you know, that clandestine in the shadows, in the dark, you know, black box, as somebody would say, like having this other concealed self back there? And I think if I'm right, John, you said, yes, that is one of the meanings. And that part of our agenda is investigating that very issue, that kind of back work involved in the doings of methods, which are usually not interrogated and focuses on methods that think of them as tools and techniques and things like that. But more specifically, when we coined or talk about double life of methods, we mean basically that methods are of the social. And I'll emphasize that really sweet and tiny preposition of because it says it better than any other word of making, shaping, constructing. It's of, and of in a kind of dual sense that it's attached to what we would say constituted by and constituting of the social, in a dual moment, and being of in both ways, of it in both senses of the word. And whatever you want to call social, we can't, and I won't debate that now, it could be an association, a connectedness, a society, a community, a nation, and it can be made up of relations between people, things, technologies, materialities, and animals. There's lots to be debated on that. If we can just hold the social as that, and you can, and I think through this kind of framework that we set out, our agenda, one can think of the social in a variety of different ways and still stay with the line of thought, I think, that we're developing here. So on the first meaning, when we say that they're constituted by the social, we mean they're also fully imbued with theoretical renderings and understanding of what that social is, along all those kinds of possible definitions and ways of thinking I just laid out. And I think for us that was a really easy step cut to take, the three of us, especially because this is a line of argument developed by researchers in STS. That was not too difficult. The doing of it, of course, is another thing, but that's not too difficult. But then we also go that other side of it to mean that methods help constitute that world. And in saying this, we're not embracing a simple constructivist kind of argument or approach, because that depends on holding the world apart out there and building it and making it with the method over here, and keeping them apart is a problem that we are trying to find a language and a way of thinking of that doesn't do that. So methods are of the social in those two ways. But there's a second meaning that's in the double life or social life of methods, and that's about their lives and the liveliness of their capacity to travel, to circulate, to do things, to have lives, establish relations, reproduce, have genealogies, selectively bring some things to life, close other ones off, and perhaps let other things die. So there is that sort of ongoingness, and that methods are never stable themselves because of all of those kinds of enrollments and engagements and liveliness of the method. So if you sort of step back from that sort of brief summary, if I can put it that way, you can probably see that we're starting from a critique of approaches of methods that see them as being tools that establish a division of labor between the theory, the substance, and the method. And that you ask research questions and you derive your issues from a theory, their hypotheses and positivist approaches, and then you have some tools and you go and, you know, get such questions tested in the field, and you look at your various substantive areas using that method. And that methods are bridging a gap between various things. And some methods in sociology, we debate whether they do it better or worse. Is one way of analyzing them, or how accurate or how accurately they respond or correspond to the world out there. Of course, and I can tell from discussions yesterday, there's lots of critiques of this already out there, of that kind of instrumentalism, of resisting a kind of objectivism. And a lot of the sociology textbooks, also parade a variety of humanistic methods that take a more constructivist approach and sort of think that way. But we also find that quite problematic in the way it's framed in most textbooks, for it kind of instantiates a kind of humanist set of assumptions about social relations into the very research process and method, such as a phenomenological concern with experience, and then that comes out of kilter and is an opposition to a post-humanist conception, such as those in science studies. So you're already setting up, this kind of binary and division. And then we end up oscillating and debating between these kind of objectivist concerns and things like bias in a method with a humanist response that tries to find refuge in a human moment, which somehow lies outside of all of these representational kinds of methods. So it's that complex oscillation that we seek to resist in that this kind of formulation. So we developed those basic starting points from our examples, and I'm going to illustrate it through a bit of my work, but first I want to emphasize that that's basically it, that these are the meanings that are suggested in the title. It doesn't come with a methods manual. It's not overly determined, but it sets out some basic propositions and then seeks to elaborate them through a lot of concepts also that we lay out in the paper, such as ones you raised yesterday, such as situatedness, relationality, performativity. But one can go in lots of these conceptual directions with just these basic propositions. And remember, we are orienting and trying to orient a diverse set of approaches and practices within our center around some, if I can say, sort of core set of propositions, and see how we can develop them in varieties of ways through very diverse kinds of investigations. And there can be more or less strong versions of doing that. If I can put it that way, we, for example, have a workshop next week of our core people, and we will have a variety of ways of taking up that core proposition. So let me talk about the method, or a method that's at work in the world, population censuses, which I should note is also a method that a great deal of social science research is invested in and also implicated in, and has been part of the assemblage of actors who have made the census a possible way for governance to know. Because as we know, to govern means to know a population. And we can obviously govern also by constituting endless kinds of groupings of people. We can talk about classes or communities or states, And that's what population is for states. It is a category of governing, and it involves the classifying and categorizing and enumerating individuals into a governing entity called a population. And we have techniques such as censuses that states have used to locate and identify people that inhabit their territories and make them into that population. But what that really simple description says to us is that methods have both purposes and advocates. So if we look at those that have been developed in the course of the 19th and 20th centuries, in addition to censuses, we can add surveys and focus groups and interviews and observation and ethnography, and they come out of a lot of tensions and negotiations between different advocates and for different purposes. Or we can say, you know, drawing from Foucault, that they are configured by particular problematizations and questions, theoretical understandings. And if we draw on Bourdieu, we can say they're objects of contestation and cooperation within different fields of struggle. We can say that all about the senses. But it also tells us that, you know, methods are not necessarily, of course, only of the academy. They can be implicated and part of the academy, but they're constituted often on a large scale by others and by other advocates and situations elsewhere. And this is perhaps our biggest challenge when we think about methods, because we can't draw lines just around the academy in terms of our methodological repertoires. We have to think about advocates who are increasingly actually not of the academy and having very little to do with the academy and social science and the kinds of concerns that we are, you know, talking about, you know, here in this collaboratory. And that's especially so now as we see methods proliferating in part due to new information technologies, the digitization of everyday life, expansions of various forms of digital transactional data, where our flows of people, goods, things, information, ideas, and money are registered and traced in ever more pervasive ways. And we also know, too, that they're being analyzed in ever more pervasive kinds of digital methods that are advocated and organized and designed by a variety of individuals and organizations that you can't neatly say are of the state or of, you know, government or of the academy or of the private sector. And that they're doing things such as identifying patterns and associations, identifying collectivities and relationships, where repetition is often an indicator of a truth about a grouping or an association, and are of interest usually only to those who are developing and using them, and that they have multiple purposes and uses and take-ups. And we can look at an example list from, you know, state security systems, targeted marketing, personal health tracking, wikis and open source software and analytics, in crime control, child protection, we see various tools and techniques of this nature, supply chain logistics, communication of issues and concerns, Web 2.0 social analytics, and you go on, and you see the proliferation of a variety of different methods and tools and techniques. We resist making a big or too big of a story out of that, because there are big stories about the information society or surveillance society, or that we have a data deluge, we're being, you know, swarming in a lot of data, or that methods and data are being democratized because of the ubiquity or supposed ubiquity of the internet and the kinds of tools and data that it enables circulation of. We can look at journalists, you know, analyzing huge databases of communiques in WikiLeaks. We can look at software engineers who are designing tools to visualize open government data. Open government being, you know, government saying we're the most transparent and providing the data, and people designing the tools and techniques to doing analyses and visualizations of that. Or security firms who are designing software to join up databases and detect potential terrorists at the border. So what is clear, we've got a whole range of what we could say new actors, new gatekeepers, new analysts who are developing a whole range of data and new methods that are of concerns and purposes quite beyond our academic ones, and in some cases even beyond the state and commercial interests. And, you know, we can go on this, but I'll go on just through a little bit more about population, because today is the first day that you can go online and do your UK census. Yeah, if you reside in the UK, you can log on and you can do an online census. But it's also maybe the last time that you will be asked or actually participate in a census, because some of these other techniques that governments are mobilizing and experimenting with involve using other sources of digital data on populations in order to know and construct knowledge and then govern populations. And in particular, I'm talking about the use of these new information technologies I've just been talking about and digitization, where the joining up of administrative databases, those databases that compile all the kinds of transactions that you have with government from cradle to the grave, pay taxes, do registrations, buy licenses, get benefits, are a more, as governments say, real-time and true picture of the actual population that's out there. And there are tons of technical debates about this switch to what I call the last census and about this, what this transactional does. And what I mean by technical debates is how is it a better measurement of the population and how does this improve, especially in a sort of very policy-oriented, evidence-based kind of form of governing. Again, assuming the population out there as being a fixed entity that one has different methods or tools to measure. But if we understand methods, as I've just tried to put forward, then and being constituted by the social, then we start to question how that method is bound up with what we could call different problematization of population. In short, what I describe at length elsewhere is a conception of population as a dynamic and mobile thing that needs to be tracked and traced, as opposed to what the census calls snapshot of. You could say a moving image instead of a still image. And that conception enrolls different advocates and actors and interpreters and gatekeepers into the making of the method, such as IT experts, which are now outpacing sociologists in the Office for National Statistics, and statisticians for that matter, and also being mediated by particular techniques such as computer networks and software and different configurations of those techniques, because to be sure, censuses always involve databases and architectures, but a new architecture, if you will, and use of data. So rather than thinking again as mentalist acts, oh, this is a population, we can think about how the method of knowing is enrolled and being constituted by these sets of problematizations, advocates, and techniques that we can't separate out but need to try to hold together. So that's the first version if we thought about population. What about how they also, in this case, constitute and order the social? Or to use jargon, how they're not just representing reality out there, but also performative, if we take that approach to thinking about it. Well, first, we know that it's not just any social. Rather, in my example, we're enacting or performing certain kinds of populations and not others. And it's what kind of a population are we? Or in one article, because the census is just starting now, I've been doing some media pieces and doing an interview on Monday, who do we think we are? And how is a method enrolled in who do we think we are? Where we think of the certain realities that are brought into being and how others are shut down and how we reproduce certain realities through these kinds of methods. And in that process, both the object and subject are constituted in particular ways. With transactional data, we could say populations become patterns of conduct in relation to government, and they're enacted as moving targets that modulate and change. This is the configurations that make up these databases and they're joining up. And also the subject is a doing and transacting being who does not attest for herself or choose how she is categorized. Who she is, in this case, is not negotiable. Whereas if we were to sort of take a simple description of a census, we could say that every 10 years, as we start to be asked today, we're asked to answer questions. And while the governments decide on the questions, a lot of people participate and intervene in challenging the questions and categories. People report who they are in ways that are often not expected or desired. The UK government is still upset that, 10 years ago, 70,000 people said they were the Jedi religion, didn't quite know what to do with that. Some people explicitly used as a protest against the religion question to begin with, and some maybe actually really believe, lots of different reasons, and we can debate that, and there are debates out there, but the fact is, you could not do that, other than on a survey or a census. But I make the point because, and there'll probably be more Jedi this time around, what we have are two possible kinds of subjects, or subjectivities, if we think of these two techniques or methods. One is constituted in relation to a subject who says who she is, and the other is done in relation to what she's doing and what she does in relation to government. We have a self-attesting subject or a traced subject. And those imagine the subject in very different ways, or subjectivities in very different ways. And that is, you know, part of the very constitution of the way of knowing. The former is also a subject we can think about as being part of those confessional techniques that draw on insights of the psi sciences about the interiority of the subject and asking and telling, who are you, versus what more contemporary techniques draw on in what we can call descriptive techniques that draw on insights from the biosciences, the behavioral, the descriptive potential, the surface, the doing person, not needing to know why, but just wanting to know what kinds of questions. So following this line of thinking, we can also ask, do we don't want these kinds of subjects and populations that are being implied by these different methods? Do we even know what they are? I'm suggesting some. We don't, when I say we, just in a sort of general, we don't ask these kinds of questions and what kinds of subjectivities and collectivities they propagate. But especially in my example, I argue that these conceptions also give rise, of course, to different ways of governing and intervening, because they do intervene and are used to intervene in the lives of subjects through example, through targeted and calibrated interventions in this sort of moving entity called population. Because they're not only representing, but as I say, they're intervening, and that way making up people and creating different worlds and different kinds of people and ways of being through their interventions. And that's another reason for going back to that earlier point that I made about methods of the social as having lives and liveliness, of establishing relations, of circulating and reproducing realities, having genealogies of problems, purposes, actors, techniques, and so on, subjects and subjectivities that are all mutually implicated. So when we get to that point, we're not, of course, just talking about method. And we're asking those kinds of political questions you were asking yesterday of what kinds of worlds and subjectivities do we want to help make more real, or are we realizing through the very methods that we also use and propagate and circulate, collaborate and share. And some, I think I've simplified much, but it really was just to make some, I think, really basic conceptual points. And to say again that we're not doing what some might criticize us of as sort of being anti-positivist and critiquing the census as a terrible standardized method, and that there are better methods that we wish to put forward. And we're not saying that we, through our methods, are discovering more subtle or better truths about, in my case, populations, and not an attack on quantitative social science. I do statistics and work with statistics a lot, and I could take this analysis and look at lots of other methods, including the qualitative, and think in similar fashion. And that's our sort of challenge or invitation, I suppose. Because what we're saying is that this is what all methods do, and it's that work that they do that is the kind of set of reflexive questions that we're trying to put more, if you will, to it than just stating it. Trying to develop at least a way of framing it and a beginning point for thinking that way, so that we can also bring to the table what kinds of, you know, social worlds that we are part of in terms of also, you know, constituting particular realities. So with that, I think that was just perfect timing, and I'll stop right at that moment and just repeat as well that there's lots more in the paper, and I hope that will be helpful to your ongoing deliberations. And also it is an invitation, because from conversations yesterday, we would really very much benefit and love to hear your responses. And, you know, we could maybe even have a chat go onto a wiki together or whatever method on the paper as a possibility. You know, get together online, do something like that at some later point after you've thought a bit more and you've had a chance to look at our paper. Because, as I said, it's a work in progress and it will continue developing. So, thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Evelyn.
You're welcome.
I do think that this really resonates a lot with the discussions that we've had, and we can have some really interesting conversations. Let's take some. We'll take some minutes. Christopher has his hand up. Christopher, you go first, and then Andrew.
I very much like the metaphor of the social life of metaphors in multiple ways you've been talking about it, but the one way you haven't talked about is the inevitable death of methods. And the implications of that, not methods as a whole, but for instance, the census. That's a method of knowing that's now changing and is being replaced by some other methods. But how do we understand if we want to take up seriously that methods help constitute and are implicated in the reality that they're studying? Mm-hmm. How do we account for the change or decline in the use of a method? Yeah. It seems like we're always neophiles and looking at the new method or the new way of doing, but very rarely we give a full life history of a method and its use, or if it's only to account for the new method if we do a genealogy.
Shall we take Andrew's question?
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I was just sort of prompted by your comments about the Jedi issue, and it's actually quite important because I remember at the time there were all sorts of almost threats, if you like, in circulation. If you do that, if you put Jedi in the census, you're committing some kind of crime. There'll be some coercion. Of course, there's been no coercion afterwards, but there was a kind of, you know, a discourse of threat around it, if you like. And it does raise the question about the power relationship involved in methods. So the government is, you know, exercising this census backed up with expertise of how things should be done, and attempts to resist that result in some, you know, threats, perhaps hand-wringing, perhaps serious questioning. And even today, I know the Green Party were considering a boycott of the current census because the computer systems are being run by one of the American arms. I'm not sure which one, but then they've been persuaded otherwise because they think the census is important. So the question I want to ask is the old Foucault question, actually. How can we be governed less? How do we relate to the power structure involved in these methods which are very much embedded in social relations?
Shall I do those two?
Can I add one more question?
Sure,
I was wondering, you know, how you think the relation between the methods that are being used and that constitute the social, they enact the social, and the methods that academics use, because there is a way in which you kind of see the circulation, so there is not a kind of strict boundary. But at the same time, particularly you mentioned that you use statistics too, so in your own work. So how do you distinguish the kind of types of statistics, or how do you distinguish your work? Because it's not the same use of method, even you know, even if we take the main propositions about enactment and performativity, you use it differently because of what you said about making particular things more real, or kind of trying to create possibly things in other ways. So how do you think about this? I mean, we had yesterday the discussion about the circularity of methods, you know, that methods that are used, they are put to use, they are created, but also how we think about our methods. How do we engage with the methods there? We had these questions about mapping yesterday, you know, what's the mapping that the security professionals are doing, and how do we how do we relate to mapping ourselves?
Right. Okay. Death of methods. Actually, when I say last census, it's a more subtle thing. It's a genealogical question, because there are aspects of the census and parts of the way the census is done as a method that draw on old forms and will be taken up in new forms. It's not, I think, the end of and starting point and end point that we can draw conclusively about the census. Some people say the census started with the Domesday Book, you know, back. And that there will be various forms and reformulations, reconfigurations of it. So I wouldn't draw a line of saying it's the last. Also, I would say that all techniques draw from each other in various ways, and that there isn't, you know, even clear boundaries about, you know, methods as having this kind of clearly demarcated history. They borrow from each other, and they reconfigure certain practices and parts of a method, as the census and its way of thinking is being taken up in a varieties of ways in terms of classifications and categorizations, and government databases mimic very much the same kinds of communities of practice that go on in censuses. So they're not as sort of, you know, this kind of division between. So I think that's a really important one. And a death of method, then, is really it's a reconfiguration, perhaps, more than death. When I said things die, it's more different groupings die or come to life. different categories and classifications can, and ways of being, but the methods themselves perhaps take on different lives, have second lives, reborn. In terms of power relations, like the Jedi question raised a very interesting issue about threats and prosecutions, because what came out at the end of it was that the state does not prosecute and has not hardly ever, you know, done it. But it was interesting in the language, especially in the way it was reported in the media, about the consequences of that kind of reporting and its reasons. And actually, because of the debate, there was almost a reassertion of that right to be able to claim, you know, something that, you know, maybe the state does not acknowledge or recognize. But about the Foucault question of governing less, I would more formulate it as, you know, governing that freedom, supposedly, in a different way. And what forms of freedom does it give rise to, and what does it close down? What kinds of possibilities? Because I'm asked all the time, well, is it a good or bad thing, you know, that this is happening? And I hate, and I know it's going to happen on Monday in a radio interview. And I hate being pushed, but media want you to say, it's a good thing or a bad thing? Yes or no, better or worse? Or are we going to have better information about who we are? It's really a tough one to answer, especially in a family program on 3 p.m. in the afternoon. With a chatty person. It's like, oh, you can't talk about, you know, Foucault and power relations there. To sort of, you know, say, well, I don't know, I better figure out what I'm going to say to that question. But, it's a hard one. But I was going to take that somewhere else. Maybe it'll come back in a moment. It comes back actually to Claudia's question, because distinguishing, you know, actually in a lot of methods of the state, sociologists have been heavily embroiled and invested. The census has involved and still does involve committees and debates between statisticians and sociologists. A lot of what the census does comes from work in statistics and sociology. A lot of other government methods as well. So they're very much bound up. And then we as sociologists take that data that we've been part of helping to create and analyze and say, the population is this. And analyze and treat it as this thing that we actually had nothing to do with, you know, that it's, you know, and some people haven't perhaps, but as a discipline and as a practice, we're very much embroiled in it. As method for ourselves, it's not just a disclosure of it, but looking at how not only our own practices are implicated in this, but also how when we go to analyze it, we can very much bring forward those kinds of involvements and engagements. And a good example from my past work is I've done a lot of work on historical censuses and gone back to the old paper forms that people hand wrote, you know, in the early 20th century. And they were grids that, you know, asked you religion, all the questions. And I've gone back with a team of other people back in Canada, and we've looked at all the crossed out things and the original answers that were recoded because they didn't fit. And there are lots of them. And you see, it's a struggle on the census form. And this is true of the techniques today. There is that happening. And the historical record we have access to is wonderful for being able to show that, but also to show how that very struggle starts to change the very technique. And the example for the Canadians here, yes, and I know I've met many of you. I looked at how a category of ethnicity called Canadian appeared on every census form since the first scientific census in 1871. Yet the state said, you can't be ethnically Canadian. You've got to come from somewhere else. We're an immigrant culture. You're from England. You've got to be from, you know, Germany. You can be German. You can be English. You can't be Canadian. So they would cross out Canadian, and they would put, oh, what's the surname? O'Reilly. Oh, well, you know, there we go. We know how to do that, or, you know, whatever. They would make assumptions, and you could see those systematic assumptions. People did that all the way up through the early part of the 20th century, until finally, in the latter part of the 20th century, due to a lot of reasons and people, you know, continuing and persisting to say this, even though instruction says you can't be Canadian. It doesn't exist as an ethnicity. People were still doing it. By the 1970s, 70,000 people were claiming it. And so for the first time, they reported it. Well, after they reported it and it got in the press, the next census, more people started writing it in. And then they put a category on, and suddenly 4% of the population appears to be Canadian, which didn't exist before. And then by the end of the 20th century, due to some campaigns to be Canadian and to let go of ethnicity as a marker, right, suddenly we have, you know, 17% Canadians coming in. Did they just appear, you know? Well, no. So that's a little example, but it's one that, you know, makes the point, I think, very well. And that when we talk about subjects and subjectivities, that possibility, that condition of possibility is there, too. You know, maybe we'll say there were Jedi in about 100 years. We'll say the Jedi started back here. And it grew, and then people, they got a category on, and then people started ticking that box, and on and on. I mean, we laugh, but it's this is how it does operate and work. Sorry, it's a long answer, but
thank you.
But a fun one.
We've got some yes questions, but maybe and Lara. Maybe we can take them. I'll take the questions. So you, and maybe if you can keep the questions, and then we
pick them up.
Pick them up in conversations, but just it'd be good to have them.
Yeah.
In your last point, what differentiates a Canadian from a Jedi? It's you know what really differentiated in terms of categories. Somebody was, you know, claiming to be a Canadian or somebody who's claiming to be a Jedi. What's the real difference? And also in terms of census, since you see, like, there's this recoding, and that's what is really interesting in terms of techniques of government. Mm-hmm. Is now the coding comes to you. You don't have any much choices in terms of filling in the form. And the more it goes electronic, the less chances you have at mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm. So to which extent through census or form of governing, like this, we also have a window into practice of resistance from mm-hmm. people, because they just either to jokes or because maybe they believe they're Jedi's, or I believe they're just like, who the hell is this government asking me this question, and I'm just going to screw it bad. You know,
could be that. Yeah.
Tara, you can make it short.
I really enjoyed. Yeah, I really enjoyed that, because I'm having to teach a master's course in research methods at the moment, and one of the things I was told was, you can do anything you want for the course, but you've got to keep the quants. So I said, put the current last year and counting the population. I'm really just thought, I hope I have five got an empirical to talk about. So thanks for that. But a self-interested question. You said you use quants in your own work, and I was wondering, is the way you use quants and what you were talking about, sort of tracing how these categories work and how they become
established,
and so are there other ways in which you use quants in a more
critical
way in your own work?
Well, there's different kinds of...
But, you know, while I'm moving over coffee, I think I just...
Yeah.
You know, what
it's
are
okay.
you doing?
That's all right.
Sorry. Let's quickly thank Evelyn, please, for a very wonderful question.
Thank you.
Awesome, very wonderful.
Thank you.